Hey, I'm Lance Frazier.
Name is Rosie Burton.
My name is Trey Mason.
You're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
I'm Cameron Marshall, and you're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
Stay tuned.
Podcast episode 108 ready for you. We are Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans, and we bring you the Piffles Podcast, Saskatchewan Rough Rider fan podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Right off the top there, that's the Johnny McKeag Band with their song Here We Go. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Greg.
Give us a follow on Twitter at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You'll find me at Safamud.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast, and check out PifflesPodcast.com. The Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Check out the great happy hour drink specials, half price, Monday to Friday. And I don't know about you guys, but we're going to, this is pretty cool. We're going to WWE on the weekend coming up here in Regina. You know what's right beside there, right? Dairy Queen. I think we should go there first.
It makes sense.
I thought we were. Why are we pretending that we're not?
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Okay, well, they have the Reese's Explosion
that is
Blizzard back.
Bloody amazing.
And I'm going to get eight of them.
So much peanut butter. So much peanut
butter. So good.
So good.
So
as long as they bring back blueberry flavoring one day, I'm good with this. Until then, I'm sad. Reese's Pieces and blueberry is heaven.
We'll get you a pumpkin pie one. Even though it's not October.
Shut up. You can give me a pumpkin pie one in 6 months.
I have some pumpkin pie in the fridge. Do you want some?
Yes.
Not too bad. It's not October. So I'm going to wrestling, which is pretty cool. And just want to say congratulations to RiderPrider19 on Twitter. You won the WWE tickets that we had. So thanks for sharing our interview with Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley, the new Intercontinental Champion.
The Almighty.
The Almighty. He's going to be there defending the championship against Seth Rollins.
Which should be a good match. He's on his way to WrestleMania, so two heavy hitters right there.
That's going to be a great time. I'm looking forward to that. So if you are going to WWE this weekend here in Regina and you see us, come say hi. We'd love to meet you. But we got to get talking football. There's actually stuff to talk about. Time for the opening kickoff. We have news and big news.
No, absolutely nothing has happened in Saskatchewan in the last 2 weeks.
Big, big news.
Not that bad.
Everybody's talking about it. The four players that signed, Valentino Blake, Trey Davis, Doug McNeil, and BJ McBride.
That McBride's a big dude. If Jones was still here, I'd say he's a Chris Jones athlete. He's a big dude. So maybe J.O.'s was signing guys? Maybe? I don't know
what you're talking about, J.O.
Or maybe these are the guys that Chris Jones hinted that were signed and just hadn't been announced yet.
That's possible, too.
So we'll rip this off really quick. Defensive back Valentino Blake spent 5 years in the NFL. Running back Tate Davis out of Bethel University. Wide receiver Doug McNeil, 3 years in the NFL, was recently in the Arena Football League. And defensive lineman, the guy you're talking about, that's so big. BJ McBride spent 2 years in the NFL as well. So those are the player signings. Okay, but there's actually real news. Jeremy O'Day named the head coach since the last time that we got together.
Head coach?
Yep. I'm looking the line down. Jeremy O'Day named the general manager. He could probably be head coach too. Why not? He should have just named himself head coach. Give himself every single job that Chris
worked
Jones
well
had. Jeremy O'Day, our defensive coordinator.
We've learned lesson from last time. We're not hiring Chris Jones to do all the jobs. We are hiring Jeremy O'Day to do all the jobs.
So
well, at least you know with Jeremy O'Day, you're getting a lifer. That guy is staying in the CFL. He loves it here.
So Jeremy O'Day named general manager of the Riders. Now, first off, thoughts on that one?
No brainer.
It was the obvious choice. There was never going to be another name.
And that's why I'm pretty sure Murphy said, yeah, I'm not taking a pay cut because I'm not the next guy in line anyway.
And it's a 3-year deal for Jeremy O'Day. So we'll get to see what kind of imprint he has on the team. And, I mean, we'll still see remnants of guys that Chris Jones put on the neg list, you know, trickle down to the team and everything.
Well, that Chris Jones is the main guy he would have learned from over the last couple of years when he's really starting to sink his teeth into this role. I don't think we're going to see much of a change.
I don't think so either.
And I'm okay with that. We've seen nothing but a rise over the last couple of years. I would like to see that continue.
I think this made the most sense from there's no sense burning down the city because Jones is leaving. This should be an easier transition than it would be to scrap everybody and do something stupid like bring in Buono or bring in Tressman to run the team as his own. If this way, there's some semblance of normalcy as we move forward.
Could you imagine the entertainment if we would have gone out and brought in a recently retired Wally Buono and how Rider Nation would have responded to that? I'm sorry you mentioned his name. It was never a possibility.
I know.
But it would have been fantastic. The Wally chance would have suddenly been positive.
It would not have been as fantastic as Stephen McAdoo being named head coach.
Oh.
I when they said they
I was hoping for that when, just because I wanted to see people lose their minds.
When they announced that interview, I'm like, oh my god, my prediction of bad things coming 3 might actually come true.
Like we work now in a business that's designed around entertainment. We are here to try and entertain. A Stephen McAdoo hiring would have made our jobs very, very easy.
I would just read tweets. Mean tweets. I might actually do that sometime. Just vlogged mean tweets because I think it'd be hilarious.
Off the record, so, can we ever actually do that? Have a player on and just have him read mean tweets?
Yes. Let's bring Dan Clark in.
They're all just from him.
Be from me.
Sorry. Carry on.
So, but luckily that bad thing didn't happen in 3, and it seems to be pretty well received by all of Rider Nation and even the players too. Craig Dickinson named the head coach, our special teams coordinator. He's still going to be in charge of special teams, mostly because they don't have a space to hire any more people because of the salary cap on
Thanks,
coaches.
Randy.
And we'll talk about that in a bit. But Craig Dickinson, not only probably the most logical choice, I think it's the right choice. Like you said, mentioning, Greg, the consistency, having the continuity with the team. He's got a good defensive staff put in place already. Likely gonna, his whole staff hasn't been officially announced yet, but likely gonna have Jason Shivers, the defensive backs coach, move into the defensive coordinator role. But these guys have all been together. All these coaches have been together for quite a long time, and to keep all of them together is a good thing.
It's not a bad staff, and say what you want about McAdoo, he has his up and down years.
Yeah, he went up, and then last year he went down.
Yes, so hopefully this year we're on the up again.
It can't get worse, right?
No.
I don't know if it can get worse. That was a terrible offense. I don't blame it all on him either.
No.
He has to wear some of the stink for sure, but it's not all on him.
But the staff together is a solid staff. You can't complain about it. Yeah, people were like, we're complaining that we couldn't interview Lapo or Elizondo, and it sucks, but Dickinson was the most obvious choice. If Vegas odds, he was the 3-2 favorite, and it was easy money.
What I liked most was if you go from the time he was announced till just not long after, there were a fairly decent number of players coming out fully in support of Craig Dickinson getting that job. The one that stood out to me the most was Daron Carter. Was as positive as I've ever seen him on Twitter about anything. But there was clear love from players that he's coached, coaches that he's worked with. It makes me feel like they made the right choice. Like this was as big a no-brainer as it seemed.
He's universally respected in this league. And you always saw his name with every head coaching hire that Dickinson was on the short list. So it's good that he's finally getting a shot, and they're going to put some time and faith into him.
The thing I like the most is that they didn't just do the quick, easy one-year hire and do a full search next year. They said, no, you're our choice. Here's a 3-year deal. This is your team now.
And I like that they did go with a long-term commitment, time up the same way that we have Jeremy O'Day, both of them on 3-year deals. It's not just a rental.
Yep.
This is going to be the head coach going forward.
Because you know you can't go into a season with a lame duck coach. This puts all of the faith of the operations staff in the group that he's hired. I love it. I had a lot to do with it
because what, as good as the job is to be head coach of the Saskatchewan Roughriders right now, you have a good defense. You're really just a quarterback away from being a championship caliber team. If you're being forced to have certain staff members that you may not want on your team as your offensive coordinator, as your defensive coordinator, whatever it is, why would you come here this year? It would make no sense for a guy like Paul Appelese to do it, other than, you know, obviously to take the promotion. I mean, when you get the chance for a promotion, you take it. But it would make no sense to do that and be handcuffed with what you can do, and then you waste one of your 3 years.
But here's the problem, though. If I'm Laporte Elizondo, I'm punching holes in walls right now because there's a... This team was fairly good as it is, so there was a nice landing spot as a head coach that they couldn't interview for, and next year, who knows what's going to be open. Like, there's a bunch of coaches got hired this year, so... Where's the next opening? Montreal?
And
probably.
And you're right. This isn't a team that fired their coach because they were doing poorly. This is a team that is on the rise, a quarterback away from a Grey Cup. This would have been the perfect landing spot for anybody if they wanted it. You got to feel bad for guys like that to not get the opportunity.
Hey, so you guys find it tacky that Ottawa and Winnipeg wouldn't let the Riders interview them? I know it's within their rights and they can deny permission, but
this is the Moss rule. And this all happened, or the Orange Rule, as I like to call it, because Ottawa went kicking and screaming when Moss went to Edmonton. And they're the ones who kicked up the biggest stink in the entire world, and that's why now permission has to be given, there has to be compensation discussed before you can even interview. It's garbage. It used to be a simple agreement if a guy was going for promotion, hence the reason why we gave Jones all the jobs... was because that was the only way we could get him out of Edmonton, because it had to be a promotion. But Edmonton's like, okay, it's a promotion. We agree with we're fine with it. And then when Moss had to go to Phil Jones's spot, Ottawa kicked up the stink, and then Orange felt like he had to step in.
See, if I'm Winnipeg or Ottawa in that situation, what I do if I don't want my guy to take the job is not to say no, it's to make the compensation request absolutely absurd. I want... three first round picks and a starting Canadian, you know, something, you know, the Riders can't say yes to, because then it comes back and the Riders said no, the team didn't say no, they can go to Paul Appelese and said, you know, we offered them something, they said no. The way they did it, just outright saying, you know, screw off, it makes them look petty.
I get the timing sucks, and it was late January or mid January, and we're getting ready for free agency, and you want to have your staff locked up so you can go after free agents, and if it was because you fired a coach, then yeah, that's on you. But you let your coach go for a promotion to the NFL.
The irony, though, about Winnipeg and Lapo is they took Lapo from us on February 4th in 2010.
Yep.
So don't give me, oh, it's too late. No, it's not. You're fine.
Do as I say, not as I do.
It's not the best timing by any means, but it's
sucks.
Not too late.
It sucks. I get it.
I completely get it from Winnipeg's standpoint. They're our closest rival. They're not going to do anything in their power to help us, right? Well, yeah. They're not going to do anything they can to help us. The last thing they need is us to win another Grey Cup before they win one. But
hell, Halifax is going to win one before they do, and they don't even have a team yet.
Ottawa just makes no sense.
Baltimore probably win one before they do again.
Baltimore did. Baltimore's going to be on two Grey Cups before Winnipeg wins
exactly.
one.
I loved running into random Baltimore Stallions season ticket holders in Orlando.
Really? Last week. Hey, how was your trip?
It's not minus 40. It was a blast.
Screw you.
Yeah.
Up yours, Steve.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Minus 40. Thanks.
Up yours, Steve.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Are you guys worried about the lack of free agent signings from the Riders?
No.
No. Yes.
There's some...
The sooner that you can get a Willie Jefferson or Naaman Roosevelt onto contract, though, the better you feel.
Oh, I agree. But you know Willie's not going to sign anytime soon.
He didn't sign until February 4th last year, I think it was. Yeah, or 14th, whatever it was.
And I'm certain the Riders probably have contracts in drawers sitting somewhere waiting for the most opportune time.
So Chris Jones said.
Because with that, too, though, you don't want to let the entire league know who's off the market, because there might be guys you're looking at. So if all of a sudden player A, B, and C is off the market, well, other guys are now locking up their guys because they thought they had shots at guys. So sometimes you want guys to hit the free agent market just to see what else is out there.
You know what I wish we had for free agency? You know the NBA has the like 10-day window or whatever it is to negotiate with free agents?
NHL's got it now too.
Isn't that amazing?
I think it's adorable that you don't think we have that already. It's just not legally. Above board.
Legally.
I believe that's
Odell Willis signed 4 minutes into free agency. That's come on.
That's because the fax machine was not plugged in probably.
Right?
I want to see chaos.
That's all we ever want to see.
And that's, we're probably not going to get it, because every time we want something, we never get it.
We can never have anything fun.
Really quick, quarterbacks and wide receivers for the Riders. Is there a plan, or do we have a plan? Or are we going to get a certain guy and as a quarterback and then go after certain receivers? Or it's just going to be a reaction thing. Be like, oh, well, Mike Riley's re-signed with Edmonton. Okay, well, what do we do? Oh, well, I guess we got to settle for somebody else. Do you think there's actually a plan, or is it just a reaction that is going to end up happening?
I'm sure there have already been, like, not that I'm saying there's tampering, but there's tampering. I'm certain there's been feelers out to Riley, to Harris's, just to see where their head's at. Not even to go, hey, we got this for you. It's like, are you interested in coming to Saskatchewan?
You have an old lineman call up Mike Riley going, hey, you know, we're 2 weeks away from free agency. How you feeling? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? The team's not calling him. They may have told certain players to call him, but, you know, it happens in the CFL. We all know this.
Players talk, and I'm certain there's been conversations made in back channels of who's interested in who. And I'm sure the Riders have. I'm certain Jay's got a plan. He better have a plan, because right now they've got no quarterback.
He's got to have at least two plans.
Yeah.
We don't have anybody under contract other than David Watford.
Yeah. But can he line up as a wide receiver if he has to?
Good, because we don't have any of those either.
Starting quarterback for the Riders in 2019.
There's got to be an A, B, and C plan.
There has to be.
O'Day is not stupid. He's got things as under control as you can when your only option is free agency. You know, he's got to hope these guys actually hit the market. What if everybody re-signs? You know, what is our plan then? But until that happens, you gotta sit back and hope he knows what he's doing.
I would be shocked if a quarterback signs before free agency starts.
They'd be stupid too. Absolutely stupid too.
Well, the Bombers just signed a quarterback. It was some nobody, but yeah, they just signed a quarterback. Yeah,
I was going to say a legit guy or in the league.
No, any of the quarterbacks would be stupid to sign before. Go out there, let the market dictate what you're going to get paid, not one team.
I know for sure is Jonathan Jennings will definitely not be in BC.
Nope.
Oh my God, I don't know what he did to Hervey, but Hervey hates him.
What did I miss? Was there more?
No, he went on again this past week going, Jonathan Jennings would probably better be somewhere else other than BC.
Oh,
I don't know. Like, every time Seam Survey opens his mouth, he says something about Jonathan Jennings.
He's got to stop that, because all he's doing is A, alienating a player, and B, lowering his value to other teams.
I was going to say, do you think that lowers his value to
Absolutely
other teams?
Absolutely, it does.
They're hearing that, and it's not making him an attractive option, because apparently there's more issues with him.
If I'm BC, I go, you know, we love Jonathan Jennings. He's not going to work here, but he's a great young player.
Just say,
we hope to sign him.
Whether you made an offer or not, you just say, well, we're going to free agency, and both of us have to do what's best for...
Right.
We have to do what's best for our team. He has to do what's best for him. Just leave it at that.
Yeah, this guy sucks, and he should go somewhere else.
that's for us to say.
Right?
Right?
The exact quote is, and this is, Hervey told Dave Naylor this, I think Jonathan, he probably should go somewhere else. It would be a great opportunity for him to explore his options, and not any other reason other than maybe a change of venue might work best for him.
Good for him. Jeez.
I mean, we sit here and we say we always want to hear coaches and players and execs say what's on their mind. I love it. Don't hold back, Ed Hervey. More from you and Cavis Reed, please.
There's also just the whole business side of things, too. Like, that's just a bad way to do business. That's what bugs me about it. I don't care. I love the honesty. I think it's great. Time and place.
What player's going to go, I can't wait to play for that guy?
No, I know.
Because if I suck, you know what he's going to do. He's going to sit there and crap talk me to the media.
But he never talked. It was just funny, because Hervey hated talking to the media in Edmonton. And now, apparently, you can't get a microphone away from him.
Opening kickoff brought to you by Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out our Facebook page, Kathy Festian, Royal LePage. Well, it's that time of year when the CFL normally is pretty quiet as teams get ready for free agency. A few re-signings are about the only things we typically hear about, but that's definitely not the case this year as there is plenty going on right now in the CFL. Joining me on the line here for the Piffles podcast is CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. Mr. Ambrosi, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Alex, it's nice to be with you.
Now, first off, the big question is on everybody's mind, the CBA. What's going on? Where are talks with that going right now?
Yeah, you know, we actually got a chance to visit with Brian Ramsey of the Players Association about 2 weeks ago. Brian attended our Player Safety and Health conference that we have, our annual medical conference. It was in Montreal And, you know, just as we expected, you know, Brian shared with us that the players, you know, after a busy season, they were, you know, they were getting together with the player reps and wanting to make sure that they were all on the same page. You know, we're doing a similar exercise with our teams. So, you know, what happens in the context of labor law is at some point the players will give us formal notice of their intention to bargain, and we'll wait for that to receive that. But, you know, for the moment, everyone's doing all the right things. They're getting, you know, they're getting prepared, and we'll look forward to, you know, when the players are ready, we'll be ready to go.
Now, one of the big things being talked about right now is player safety. What exactly is being done on that front?
Well, you know, it's an ongoing process. This isn't a new exercise. You know, part of it will some ideas that will surface will get talked about during the rules committee. You know, I spent some time this week with Darren Hackwood talking about some of the ideas that are, you know, that are going to be on the table at the rules committee. So that, you know, that's definitely happening. You know, we had a fantastic session with our team doctors, and, you know, first of all, I enjoy just spending time with them, but you really come to appreciate how much they care about the players. And, you know, we just talked about some of the advances, you know, in medicine, and, you know, some of the issues that they're looking at. I think it's a constant and steady evolution.
Now, another thing that's coming up, and we're seeing this players talking about this on social media, is contracts. And basically, why is it okay that a player has to kind of fulfill his end of the contract, but the team doesn't have to fulfill their end, and they can kind of release them whenever?
Well, you know, it's the nature of our contracts. And, you know, look, if, you know, what our fans want is our fans want the best players playing. Fans want winning teams. They, you know, they want the teams to have the ability to put the best product on the field. And so, you know, in order to be able to do that, you have to be able to, you know, every player goes into their career knowing that at some point they're not going to be able to play. You know, if you know, somebody comes along that's just more talented than they are, or bigger, stronger, and faster. That's a reality of our sport. That's a reality, I guess, of life. That eventually, you know, somebody's going to come along and take your place. You know, look, we're going to talk about all the important issues when we sit down with the players. You know, I'm sure there'll be ideas surfaced on their side. We'll have ideas that are surfaced on ours. We're going to try to be remarkably professional and thoughtful as we talk these things through. But you can't, you know, how does that phrase go? Father time is undefeated. And, you know, there's a certain reality to life.
Now, this offseason, more than any offseason, we've seen so many of our CFL stars going down south to the NFL, fulfilling their dream. Are long-term contracts being talked about to keep our stars here in Canada? Because many fans are worried that there's no connection to their team anymore, and it seems like there's a lot of movement, and we don't see the, you know, the six-year deals that you see in the NFL or the NHL or, you know, any of the other major leagues. Why don't we see that in the CFL?
You know what, Alex, quick, seriously, I get asked this question as much as almost anything else that I talk to fans about, is they would like to see more continuity on our rosters. They love their star players and want to see them stay, you know, with the team for as long as possible. And that will be the subject of a conversation with the players. You know, trying to find a way to work with our players. And this is going to be, you know, a fundamental tone of our discussions is, how do we work together to grow and make the CFL bigger and stronger? And I can tell them, you know, through a firsthand experience, how frequently this subject is raised with our fans. I think it's an important topic, and one that we have to talk to the players about and see if we can work together to find a solution.
The coach's salary cap. Why?
Well, you know, in large part because when you know, when we presented to the Board of Governors an analysis of the league's financials. Our fastest growing expense category in the league by far, the fastest growing expense category, was our non-player football operations costs, and, you know, outstripping revenue growth by a factor of almost three times. That's not a good business model for any of you who have missed that lesson in business school. And when we talked to the players, there was frustration amongst the players as well that they're working under a salary cap, and they've seen the significant growth in the number of coaches, the number of people in our non-player football operations area. And there was a frustration that they're, you know, that the players are being held to a standard that nobody else is. So it was a combination of all of those things. So, you know, the exercise was done, you know, in total collaboration with the teams to make sure that there was you know, we tried to land at the right place with the right numbers of coaches and support staff in the you know, the non-player category. And ultimately, you know, this is something that the governors felt was important, was an important step to take.
Now, your CFL 2.0 initiative, first, the Mexican Combine and the draft, the LFA draft. First of all, how did that come about in the first place?
Well, you know what? This is just, I'm in my own mind, I got to start separating fact from folklore. You know, really, it was the very, very, the early origins of this whole thing was a presentation I made to our lead governors about the changing nature of some of our CFL markets, Toronto and Vancouver, to name two, that these were cities that were not defined by their Canadianism, but really defined by their internationalism. And, you know, I hypothesized that we needed to look at that more carefully. The second was an analysis done of what's happened in sports leagues around the world. And everywhere you look, you've seen that the rapid rise or growth in those sports and the rapid growth in their revenues and their success has come when they went to a more international model. You know, thinking, you know, Yari Curry, when he played for the Edmonton Oilers, was the only Finn playing in the NHL. And now there are 44 Finns playing in the NHL. But if you go back and look at how much more the players in the NHL make today compared to what they made in Yari Curry's era, you see a tremendous growth in the success for the player when those leagues have adopted an international strategy. And you know, we did that analysis, and it was compelling. And it happened to coincide with an introduction from Blake Mill, who's the head coach at the University of British Columbia, to the principals of the LFA in Mexico. And, you know, I took an idea to the Board of Governors that there may be a whole other way of thinking about our future, one where we could grow, you know, grow our game, welcome in an international contingent of players. I'd say the one thing that got our governors excited is the idea we also can create a pathway for more Canadian players to fulfill their dreams in football. It doesn't have to be a career in the CFL to be fulfilling. You know, so many of our kids that finish playing university football, finish their junior career, still they haven't lost their love of the game. And what's been happening, in fact, we met with the German Federation today in Toronto, is that there is a willingness of all these federations to welcome Canadian players into their game as a way of helping our players, you know, continue to pursue this game that they love. So all of those things have come together to create an opportunity. You know, we had a very successful experience with the scouting combine in Mexico. We're looking forward to welcoming some players from the the European federations. We're in conversations with them about how we, you know, get them into a scouting combine. And you know, it's just a way to re-energize our game. Show our fans a new experience, you know, this international player opportunity, and for me, giving more Canadian kids a chance to play the game they love. And it's all of those things that came together.
So I do have a couple other questions just regarding this draft with the LFA, and we can talk about Germany in just a minute here. Why was there a draft done instead of just, you know, adding designated negotiation list spots?
Well, in part because, look, what we want to do is kind of approach this part of our strategy a little differently. So we thought we would try something, a different approach. One is we don't want our teams having to send people all around the world kind of looking for the next star. So if you don't organize it, if you don't have the international players flow through a combine and then a draft, then it becomes a free-for-all. And now the added expense, of course, not just scouting players, but scouting players internationally could become counterproductive to our goal of a bigger, stronger, financially stronger league. So we said, listen, we're going to try this. Let's try doing something a little different. So international players will come in through a scouting combine, and then they'll be drafted. This kind of prevents that free-for-all idea. And it's something we're going to try. And who knows, you know, we may adjust in years to come, but this seemed like a logical place to start.
Now, will roster sizes be increased to accommodate these new players, or is it just a case of, you know, they make it through a mini camp, get to training camp, and it's, you know, best man gets the job?
Yeah, we're, you know, this is an important item for us to talk with the players about, and you know, so we are, you know, we've said to Brian Ramsey and Ken Giorgetti of the Players Association, you know, we're looking forward to talking about how we grow the CFL together, how we grow the game, and this will be an important part of that discussion.
Now, you mentioned Germany. Is there any other international places that you're talking to right now? I know you have meetings going on right now, but where else is the league looking for players?
Yeah, we're going to be talking to the French Federation, the Austrian Federation, the federations from the four Nordic countries. We've had an outreach from Poland just recently. It's been crazy, Alex, just how many people have kind of expressed an interest in building bridges between the Canadian Football League and the rest of the football playing world, and it's an exciting time for our league to, you know, to play a real role in the development of our game globally.
Off season, anything but you know, time off for the commissioner then, right?
Well, no, my wife mentioned that. She asked about that idea of an off season. We had a good chuckle. No, you know what? Listen, it's an honor to do what I've been asked to do and to work with a great board of governors who, you know, are passionate about our league. You know, Alex, I say this, you know, I'm often asked, and people say, well, why do you have to do this? Why not just concentrate on fixing Toronto? And I say, well, this is part of fixing Toronto and re-energizing BC. Those cities have changed so much. And look, you don't think that the owners of the Toronto Argonauts, whether you go back to Sherwood Schwartz, and then you had, you had Bruce McDowell and his partners, John Candy, Wayne Gretzky, and you had, you had Cinnamon and his partner. You don't think they tried to re-energize the Toronto Argonauts? And the answer might not be in peddling the same old bike harder. The answer might be that we re-energize the league with a more global concept. Look at curling. Curling could easily be contained inside of Canada's Canada's borders. But, you know, the world of curling is more exciting because there's a global there's global competitiveness. And look, I don't know why the CFL should be relegated to a second class position in anything. I don't believe that we are second class in any way. We should be the biggest, strongest, most global sports league possible. And boy, if it takes working a little, putting in a few extra hours from December 1st through the beginning of June, I'm more than happy to do that.
I like that you brought up curling because, like they say, curling rocks, right?
Curling rocks, yes, right.
And finally, I hear that you're doing the town hall tour again this year.
I am. You know what? It's something I don't want to ever miss. A chance to visit with our fans is important. Really looking forward to getting a chance to come back out. Last year was so educational. I learned a lot. Fans gave me a lot of good feedback. And I'm looking forward to, it's a great time to just spend listening, asking questions. You know, fans have good questions about where we're going and some of the things that we're working on. And I'm excited to hit the road here in a couple of weeks' time.
So that'll be in about mid-February then?
That's right, yeah.
And can we expect a Grey Cup announcement for 2020 in that time as well?
You know, we're getting closer to a decision on it. The truth is, we had three fantastic bids. Two of the three are neck and neck right now. The governor's wanted a little bit of time to sort out a couple of questions, but boy, I'm super proud of the teams for the bids they put in. And yeah, you will expect an announcement in the not too distant future.
Well, Mr. Commissioner, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy with meetings, so I'll let you get back to that. And we will see you on the road here in your town hall tour in a couple weeks.
Absolutely, Alex. Thanks very much. And best wishes to all of your fans. You guys, like curling, you rock.
Well, there you go. CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi here on the Piffles Podcast answering some of the questions that you guys have, that I have, the fans. And we'll have our chance to talk to him, like he said, in a couple weeks in his town hall tour. So when he gets to your city, make sure you go there. We went last year, and it was actually really good. You got to go up to a mic and ask him a question, and he answered it. So if you have questions about the league, just save them for a couple weeks, and Commissioner Randy Ambrosi will be coming to your city very soon.
Time for a chat with Rider alumni, and joining us on the phone for the Piffles Podcast this week is one of the players who really made me personally a fan of this team, 2011 Plaza of Honor inductee, Mr. Corey Holmes. Corey, thanks for your time.
Yes, I'm glad to be here. Be on your call tonight, man. Glad to get the invite. Just looking forward to a great interview and reaching out to the people who actually made me feel real well when I was in Saskatchewan, and I still have a place for them in my heart right now.
Now, first off, how are you? How are things going for you?
Things are going great. Still staying active and, being a family man, raising my kids. I have four kids, three daughters, one son. Was 8 years old, a beautiful wife, just back home, trying my best to make an impact the way I did back when I was playing, up in Saskatchewan.
Before we start talking about your time up here as a Rider, you were recently the mayor of Metcalf, Mississippi. What made you want to run for public office in the first place?
When I got back home, back in 2008, when I came back home, and this was a lot of things that I saw, with my community going on, that I knew that I could make a difference. And I didn't think about running for public office. So, but people are like, well, the only way that you can make sure these changes happen, you need to get in a, better position to influence. And they was like, well, Corey, why don't you run for mayor? And I was like, well, for mayor, I've never done politics, before. But it was more the people, kind of persuading me. And I prayed about it. And I ended up doing two terms, 8 years, and ended up being around my hometown for 8 years. And it was a great experience, a great leadership experience. Got a chance to help a lot of people, got a chance to help my town that I grew up in, accomplish a lot of things in those 8 years. And, it was just a great experience as far as my leadership, my character. And it was also predicated on my playing career. Being the mayor, going back to those days when things got tough, we was able to fight out of it. I was able to fight through it. So it was great just to be able to help people and to be able to develop myself. So that's why I did it, just to help people. I've always been a people person and wanted to help people all of my life.
Now, June 2001, you signed with the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the CFL. When you signed, did you know anything about Saskatchewan or anything about the CFL ahead of time?
I knew about the CFL, but I didn't know about Saskatchewan, because only teams we really hear about in the States would be Toronto. That was because of Watson Ishmael. I knew about Calgary because of Bill Clooney. line. It's the first thing I did. Cell phones and things like that. So the technology wasn't that savage back then, but you could get on the internet. So I went to the computer and I began to look up some sketches. I was like, man, that's a long way from Mississippi all the way to Regina, Saskatchewan. and I was like, didn't know where I was going, but I knew I was going to play football. And when I got there, Saskatchewan reminded me so much of back home. You know, it's just a family atmosphere, small town, the way the people treated me when I was there. And so it was like a home away from home. The only difference was the weather. So it took a while for me to kind of get used to the weather, but it was a great time there, and I enjoyed what I signed there up under the leadership of Warren Shivers and Danny Bear.
Now, speaking of weather, it's about minus 40 here with the wind chill tonight, so I'm sure you don't miss it too much right now.
Yes, sir.
Now, 2002, your career takes off. You have over 2,700 yards, 7 touchdowns. You win Special Teams Player of the Year. What do you remember most from that season?
It was a very learning type season. Even 2001, I was, Coach Barrett, he always said to just keep working hard. Like, you know, you're going to get your opportunity. But I finally got my opportunity. It still was a learning experience, but it was a year. I think we finally made the playoff that year. We had a chance to go to the first round of playoff that year. Our special team coach, Mr. Alex Smith, I remember like yesterday, we had one of the top special teams in the league. And I was a running back that was turned into a punt returner. Okay. So I never returned punts before. And so as the year went in, as more games I played, I got more comfortable, and that second half of the season, that's when my season kind of took off as far as specialty. And what I can remember about that, you know, the first time they came to me and said, look, Corey, we want you to return kicks. And I was like, you want me to return kicks? And I'm like, man, I've never returned kicks before. And, you know, Mr. Shearer was like, hey, this is the way you're going to make this team. We know you can do it. And it was more of a trial and error type thing, you know, but I grew through the experience. I became more comfortable catching punts. We began to gel as a team, began to make the playoffs every year from that point on. And I remember winning the Grey Cup in 2007 when I came back there in 2007. So that year was a very tight learning year for myself, you know, because, like I said, I had to get comfortable with the punt returns, and it was a trial and error type year. So it actually grew me into the type of player that I was that year of 2002.
So fast forward to 2005, you win Special Teams Player of the Year again with over 3,400 total yards, which at the time was third all time. Can you compare that to 2002?
That year, the season kind of just took off for me. I can remember returning the opening kickoffs of the season for a touchdown against Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And it was like, man, it was just, you know, because 2004 was more of an injury plagued year for me. I kind of had a turf toe and things of that nature. So when I came back in 2005, King Keith was there. We had all of our nucleus there. And that year, we was more comfortable with the offense. I was more involved in the passing game. I actually had a chance to start more games at running back due to some injuries to other people. So that was more of the year that I became almost in that leadership type of role where I began to see myself as a leader in the locker room, and the guys really believed in things that I would say and things that I would do on the field. And so that was a great year also, and I was up for MVP of the West, I think, up for the MVP finals. For the West, so that was a great year, and that was the best year that I actually had in the CFL. So 2002 and 2005, I still have those plaques up on my wall at home, and I talk about it sometime with my son, and to this day, I still remember those 2 years like yesterday.
Going back to that opening kickoff against Winnipeg, Taylor Field goes nuts. Tell us about that game. You also returned a touchdown, punt for a touchdown too, I believe.
Yes, actually, I did return the punt for a touchdown. I actually ran it back, and I actually got caught, I think, at the either the 8 or the 5 yard line. But I remember that that game when I came over to the sideline, I actually had to go inside because those plays happened like back to back. When I returned the opening kickoff, our defense ended up making Winnipeg go two and out. So they had to punt the ball right back to me. And so I still was gassing. And so when they kicked the ball, I'm like, man, I'm gassed. And I ended up breaking the punt for almost 65 yards. And I almost ran that one to the house. And I came to the sideline. I think I made the McDonald's cheeseburger challenge popular that game because that's what I ate before the game. And I had to go inside. I had to go inside the locker room because I came to the sideline after that. And I threw up the cheeseburger because that was my pregame meal. And so I went inside. And I remember Roy came in the locker room. He's like, man, what you doing? You got to get back on the field. I'm like, hey, I just need some oxygen. I had to throw up. I threw up on the sideline. And I came back out, and I ended up having like over 300 and some total all-purpose yards that game. And our offense, we really exploded our offense. It gave us great field position that night. And you know, like I said, that table field just went nuts that night. And actually, before the game, it had thunderstorms. Like, the rain had came in. And right before kickoff, everything had ceased. You know, it was raining real hard before kickoff. We had to go in and change our shoes. So I had to put on a different shoe and everything. So, man, that was a Memorial-type night. You know, I remember everything. You know, so I made the McDonald's cheeseburger really popular that night when I threw up on the sideline. And I talked about it with the business. So it was very fun, man.
Now, the real question is, did you change your pregame meal after that, or did that become mandatory almost?
Yeah. And you know what, that game, I don't know, I think I was running a little bit late, because I usually, with me and being Jason French was my roommate at the time, and we were usually doing these pregame meals, but that day, for some reason, Jason left before me, and I ended up coming in the car, that we had a vehicle there, and I ended up coming late, and so I had to stop and get something real quick. And so I was like, man, I got to get something. I hadn't eaten all day. And so after that, I kind of changed my routine. We kind of went back to our regular routine, the places that we would eat at, you know, before our pregame meal. So
now, before the 2006 season, you get traded to Hamilton as part of the Ottawa Renegades dispersal draft. What was that day like for you, getting traded away from Saskatchewan?
Man, it was tough. You know, it was tough. And the thing about it, I had some coaches that I had a GM who was very honest with me, you know, as far as in the trade, and they called me and said, look, it's possible that you might be traded. You know, we need a quarterback, and Hamilton, they want you. And I was like, why do they want me out of all people, you know? And that was during the time when Ottawa, we had lost a team in Ottawa, so those players were up to be in the draft. And I think at the time Hamilton had a chance to actually get Kerry Joseph, but Saskatchewan ended up getting Kerry Joseph and also Jason Ofsted. But it was a very kind of heartfelt. You know, I was hurt. Because I wanted to finish my career in Saskatchewan, and when I got over to Hamilton, I was there, you know, but I always had Saskatchewan still in my heart. That's why I wanted to finish my career, but it ended up happening. I did finish my career there, but, you know, like I said, just to leave, to go and experience, you know, another organization, it was never the same, you know, as far as how the people, how the fan base was there in Saskatchewan, and even the organization. So it kind of took something out of me for a minute. It took me a while to kind of get myself back together. But I ended up coming back in 2007 and finishing my career there.
That year and a half in Hamilton didn't really go your way, so to speak. Do you think it was because the coaches didn't know how to use you properly, or?
Well, you know, the first year there, you know, we had Joe Pau-Pau, who's a very veteran, CFL coach, and when I got there, I think they really didn't know what they actually wanted, where they wanted me to fit in the offense at. You know, and it was more of a, you know, did you want me to just be a special team guy? Did you want me to be fifth receiver, sixth receiver, You know, so it was ways that they were trying to fit me in the offense. They were trying to go back and look at films the way Marston Benson did. And it was more of a different type of offense because they were more of a one back type system. You know, it takes a Lennox and you know guys that ran the ball for them. And you know, in Saskatchewan, we always use a two back system. Myself and Ken Kidd, every guy I shared the backfield with. You know, we had a system that, you know, we could implement both of us at the same time. Sometimes me and Ken Keith was on the field at the same time. Sometimes he was out there, you know. But, you know, we had different ways of attacking. And the second year, you know, we ended up getting Charlie Taft, who, you know, who had left the CFL for a while. And his system was kind of the same, you know, kind of like the one back, the big back type guys. And it kind of never worked out, you know, for me. Over there, you know, just, you know, whether it was returning kicks, you know, caught a couple balls sometimes. So, you know, I don't blame the coaches or anything like that. You know, sometimes it's just a system that the type of player that you are, you know, when you're in a good system, sometimes it's good for you to stay in that system. You know, I like New England Patriots. A lot of guys that play with New England, once they leave New England, you never hear from them again because it's the system, you know, that makes it work. So it was more of the system that I was in Saskatchewan. You know, I fit well into that type of system. So I don't want to blame any coach or anything like that, but I kind of went back and looked at film, try to work me in, but it never did work out. So I did end up coming back to Saskatchewan.
So midway through 2007, you find yourself back home in Saskatchewan, albeit not in your typical number 19 jersey. Did you ever ask James Johnson for your number back?
No, I've never asked for it back. James Johnson, who was one of the best DBs I've probably ever played with, who was the Grey Cup MVP that year. It wasn't about, you know, really getting my number back. You know, and I knew I was kind of on the back end of my career. You know, and I kind of figured that year in 2007 was actually going to be probably my last year on the field because, you know, I knew younger players were coming in, and the last two seasons that I've had, you know, I knew I was going to either take a pay cut or even just find my way to fit into a system where I could stay in the league another two years. But I kind of knew I was on the back end of my career, so it really wasn't about the number. It was just really about finishing on top. And I just wanted to go out on top, and that's what we did in 2007. We went out on top. You know, we was the Grey Cup champs, and what a way to go out, and also to be able to leave from the team that you wanted to retire with, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So it was a great year. I thank Ken Austin for bringing me back. I came back. I started a couple games. Had some pretty good games. It was a slow start for me. You know, they fitted me in the offense. I had Kerry Joseph there. Neil Murphy, you know, I think Matt Dominguez got hurt that year. So we ended up doing a lot that year with a lot of players from the future. And so we persevered through that year and ended up making it to the Grey Cup, and we ended up beating the Winnipeg Blue Bombers right there in Toronto, Ontario. So I was just pleased to just finish my career on top. And that was the 2007 Grey Cup.
Now, that Grey Cup game, 23-19, we like throwing that out to our Bomber friends as well, too. So, 1990.
That's right.
But tell us about the celebration after the game. Like, what was that whole thing like for you guys?
Man, the celebration was tremendous. It was great. I got a chance to have my family there. Two of my daughters were there. My oldest two daughters, they remember it. But the celebration with the team was great. When we got back, man, to Saskatchewan, the parade, on the stage there at the stadium, you know, just being welcomed back to the home city, man, it was nothing like it. You know, from the time we won the Grey Cup, from the time I left coming home, man, you know, that's all you could see all over the Providence. Everybody talking about the Grey Cup, you know, so the celebration was wonderful. And you know, and that team, you know, a lot of those guys I still keep in touch with that we won the Grey Cup with. And, you know, it just was a tremendous season and also a tremendous group of guys to actually win the Grey Cup with. You know, so that's what stood out to me, a tremendous group of guys who believed in one another, no matter how tough it got, what guys got hurt. We stuck together, and we made everything work out for the best for all of us.
Now, you mentioned a good fun group of guys in that 2007 locker room. Is there any particular player that stands out as a really good pranker in that group?
A really good pranker in that group? Oh, man. Jeremy O'Day, man. Jeremy O'Day Dean Mikowski, those guys, they were some funny guys, man. Also, Y'all Murphy. Let me see. Defensively, James Johnson. He was a very tight guy. The D lineman we had, Scott Schultz. Scott Schultz, man, was a funny guy, man. So, you know, those are some of the guys. This main Wes Chase, he was a funny guy. You know, saying Wes was quiet, but man, Wes could really, you know, crack the jokes and stuff. So you know, you had a lot of guys in that locker room with a great sense of humor. Andy Davis. Old catching guy, you know what I'm saying, was around for a while. Those are some of the guys that kind of stand out, you know, on that team. Kennedy McKinson, he was a very, you know, guy that would, you know, prank and tell jokes and things of that nature. So, you know, I'm just thinking of some guys off the top of my head right now. But you know, we just had a great group of guys, man, you know, that really, you know, love the city of Saskatchewan. Love the organization and love playing with one another.
Now, one of the last times we saw you was your Plaza of Honor inductee in 2011. What was that like, getting the call and then ultimately, you know, being enshrined in Rider lore?
Man, that was man. I was so good to be back in Saskatchewan in 2011, and at that time, I had my whole family with me. My son, he was right at 1 year old, and my daughters were like three, one of them was like four, one was three, the other was like six. They all remember that when we came over there, and just to ride in the back of that truck, man, to go around the stadium, to be introduced as one of the inductees of the honor, man, and giving a speech, and seeing the highlights and the guys that I actually was inducted with, you know, man, everybody always actually back home now. Man, do you ever miss being in Canada? I said, yes, I miss it because that's like my second family here. And it was like, well, would you ever go back? I was like, if the opportunity presented itself, I would go back. You know, right now I'm doing parks and recreation here in the county that I'm in of like 30,000 people, and I do youth sports, and I'm like, you know, I coach youth teams. Youth basketball, youth football. I coach a lot of youth teams here. And I said, the opportunity was there. I said, well, I can go back and coach. You know, I would love to come back, you know, just to be back in that Providence, you know, to be with the people there. But being inducted in that Plaza, and man, that still has a big place in my heart also, you know, just, you know, knowing that when I see the new stadium now, I see my picture on the wall, my stats and everything, you know, Corey Holmes, and one of the top, you know, all-purpose guys that ever played in Saskatchewan. That's big. That's big for me, and that's big for my family also.
Now, the final word here to you, Mr. Holmes. You got an open mic to the people of Saskatchewan. Is there anything you'd like to say to Rider Nation?
Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep the passion, the persistence that they have has been, you know, fans and followers of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. You know, I still get a chance to watch some of the games on ESPN. You know, I want the people of Saskatchewan to know that I love you all. You know, I still have a special place, in my heart. I never forget the families that I stayed in the basement with, all the times I was in the mall, all the autographs I signed, all the cheers that I got when I was on the field, all of the church programs that I attended when I was there, all the speaking engagements. You know, I really enjoyed that, and I just want to let you all know that I really miss you all. And if any of you all want to contact me, feel free to look me up on Facebook. You know, I love you all, and I thank you guys for giving me this opportunity to for the people in the Providence to actually hear my voice. I'm not there physically, and just thank you all for this interview.
Any plans to come up to Saskatchewan anytime soon?
Man, I you know what? I'm trying to make plans, man, to see if I can make a game this year. I'm gonna try to reach out to Jeremy O'Day, and see if I can get a man to set me a ticket aside up there where I can come and probably do some promotion or stuff, man. I won't charge him anything. I just want to be a part of the team and, you know, just do some sort of organization to try to help him out.
I don't think he's got the pull to do something like that now.
Okay. All right.
He was just named the general manager here, so.
MVP
oh,
of.
Oh, he just made general manager?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, general manager of football operations.
Oh, well, that should be pretty good then, man.
Yeah, send him a message.
If he's a general manager, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yes.
I know I looked online and I knew he was looking for another coach. So did we ever get a coach in place?
Yeah, they hired Craig Dickinson, the special teams coordinator.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's great. That's great. That's great, Craig Dickinson. I remember Craig when I was up there.
Yeah, so give one of them a call and come on up to Saskatchewan.
Okay. Yes, sir. And when I get there, man, I'm gonna make sure I look you guys up too, man. Maybe I can go live, you know, come in and just do a live interview over there, you know, and let people know that I'm in town.
Oh, we would absolutely love that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you have a great night, and we'll talk to you hopefully soon.
Yes, sir. All right, y'all have a good night.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but hopefully he does give Jeremy O'Day a call here and we get him up here to Saskatchewan. I'd love to have him here. That's one of the players that I didn't really get to meet when he was a player here, so that'd be super cool.
He was almost the first player I broke my jersey ban on. Because I've always swore I would never get a jersey with a player on it because they just never stayed. And I almost broke it for him. And then we traded him.
He was definitely the first player from the new era that made football really exciting here again. I'm glad that he's kind of keeping an eye on things. I really hope he comes up.
I would love to meet him in person and shake his hand because, yeah, he was a bright spot in a dark time for a while.
I'll turn it around, though. All right, that's going to do it for us this week here on the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure you check us out on Twitter at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You'll find me at Safamud.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
We're also on Facebook. Give us a like there. Facebook.com/PifflesPodcast and check us out on Instagram at PifflesPod. Piffles Podcast brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Special thanks as well go to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty, Tallgrass Apparel, Churchill Brewing Company, and Cypress Hills Destination Area for their support to make this show possible. Thanks for listening to the Piffles Podcast.